This is a poem by Rumi. The guest is inside you. That's the guest, as in the beloved. And also inside me. The guest is inside you, and also inside me. You know the sprout is hidden inside the seed. We are all of us struggling. None of us has gone far. Let your arrogance go and look around inside. So I could read that again later, maybe at the end or something. I wanted to speak a little bit about, there's a gap that happens often between our idea of of meditation, of how it should be, and what's actually happening. So we often come, and I know this from myself, and I know this from hearing people, you know, and as we start to have one-to-ones, it's like the flow begins, you know, between us, to actually know what to talk about. Because sometimes I think of, before a retreat, try to think of something wise to say, and I can't normally find anything until this flow begins between us of hearing what's going on, and sometimes reflecting on my own experience and or what I'm practicing with at the moment, and then I find something to go on, you know. It starts to come, the weave. So yeah, this gap of, I hear it so often, and including this retreat of, but I should be calm, and I should be, meditation should be giving this. And then that's not what's happening at all. And this also, is so often what's happening in our outside of meditation life, outside of formal meditation, what we call daily life, that but the world should be like this, and yet that's not what's happening. And people should be treating me like this, or I should be like that, but that's not what's happening. And there's a lot of, sure, it's a complex subject. It's not that simple, you know. But the tenets of the main classical Buddhist teaching is meeting that unsatisfactoriness of life. That we can't quite get it right. As we've just seen, some people think the room is too hot and some people think it's too cold. And how are we going to deal with this situation? And this can be an example of the whole of our lives, you know. The knot is just not quite right, you know. And so there's that gap in meditation of thinking that it should be making us all perfect and zen, like on the picture of when you look at those photos of for retreat places, you know, sometimes they put some really calm person, they often look really beautiful as well, and they're sitting in the perfect posture. They don't look like they're uncomfortable and going through pain. They look totally blissed out. And then we go, oh, that's how it's supposed to be. And come with that expectation. And then there's disappointment, you know, in something somehow. And so it's just helpful to know a little bit, be aware of the expectations, the ideas of what meditation is, and then there's meditation, you know, and then there's what's actually happening, and bringing our willingness to meet that, to welcome that, what's actually going on, instead of an idea. And the idea could come from wonderful, peaceful moments we've had in the previous retreat. You know, and then we want it always to be like that. We're like, yes, that's it. That's what meditation is. And I want it to happen again and again. And it's not. It's not. It's not like that. Even after many years of meditation, it can be surprising, or it surprised me that I thought that I'd cleared the field, you know, that I'd pulled the weeds out. And yet, like after 15 years of meditation, some trauma I didn't know about hit me on the back of the head in the middle of a retreat. And maybe I was taking those 15 years to prepare the ground, because before that I wasn't ready to deal with that, you know. So there's no fixed. We just get in the cruising and we go straight down the motorway once we're in our seat, because we tend to get knocked off our seat somehow. And that's just worth bearing in mind, you know. And how often we're insulating a lot of the time against the cold room with our blanket, as a metaphor for what we're doing in life, to protect against just the fact of being human, the ups and downs, the pains, you know. We have many habits and ways that we've been picking up in life as a blanket. And there's that one thing of, well, it's a bit cold, so I'll put a blanket on or a jumper. And that there's I'm not saying there's something wrong with that. That's, of course you do that. Or you've got a headache, you know, get an aspirin or whatever, you know. We do what we can. And we, with discernment, can decide, oh, that's a battle worth fighting, you know. Instead of raging, the world's like Don Quixote, you know. The world's not as it should be and I want it to change. We can choose our battles where we can actually have an effect and stuff like that. And then there's that insulation thing where we've insulated against strong feelings, strong emotions. And for me, that's really part of the essential oil of the Buddhist teachings is getting to know our insulation habits. I don't know if any of you have ever done a bit of electricity, you know, when you have to change a plug or something and you get those special kind of pliers. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? And that you clip on and that pulls the plastic off and then you can connect, you know. And somehow, we can get shocked on retreat because we're taking the insulation off, you know. And suddenly it's, you know, all sorts of stuff can start to come up that we had insulated ourselves from. And sometimes it's the insulation itself that is causing the suffering. They're trying to insulate against others, against the world, you know. And so we're losing connectivity with the world through that insulation. We're not feeling connected to others. And so that process of with those special pliers, that I wish I could get mine back, actually. Because I lent them to someone who was doing an electrician's course as a present because he finished his course. And then he went on to be a builder. And so since then I've been like, oh, what about those special pliers I had? So, yeah, retreats can be like a reality check of where we're actually at, you know, where we're coming into to what's actually happening. And that can be juicy and it can be a bit scary and it can be joyful and all sorts. Because so often You know, we've given priority to the busyness of life, the material, the running for the career and everything. And then sit down in meditation and, oh, I didn't know that was going on, you know. I didn't know that was happening, living in my heart, you know. I know for myself just these last 2 days has been, oh, wow, I didn't know that was happening for me in my life. I didn't know that was the underground feeling has become clear of, this situation. And I'm going, oh, wow, okay. I don't know if that makes sense to you. That kind of uncovering, you know. To get in touch with something that can and cannot be painful. It's also the joy, you know. We don't need to focus on the painfulness, but we don't need to cover it up either. And that's why retreats, often, I'm saying this really for people who are just on their first retreat, you know, sometimes it can be a surprise because they're like, yeah, but I thought that it was all just shiny, happy people, you know. But it's a process. And the process is the meditation. So, so that willingness to meet what's really happening as a practice in formal meditation and in daily life, to not be pushing away the unpleasant necessarily, or the pleasant, in a way it's relinquishing control. There's a sort of surrendering to it that is very, it's not the same as just going, okay, I'll just accept any old world and I won't try for a better world, you know. It's not the same thing. In my books anyways, that how am I manifesting in this world? It's like we are the world we want it to be. But without the control freak aspect, you know, the frenzy of trying to control our lives, when actually a lot of the time it's pretty unpredictable, the ups and downs, hey. So how to come into that, here's the action, from a wholesome place, rather than an anxiety-based need to try and control things, people, outcomes, results, da-da-da. And part of Sumedha's talk yesterday was a lot about our own belonging in ourself and coming into that, and some words I've found for that recently. Because for me, that belonging in ourself is part of finding that appropriate movement of here I'll, you know, if you're an activist, for example, here, yes, I'll go and do that and chain myself up to a thing for the climate or whatever. Because that feels right, you know. That form of belonging, could be called re-inhabiting our lives. It could be like, I've heard of this rewilding nature, you know, where, and I just love hearing about this kind of thing, where people recreate wetlands and ecosystems in places, in parks, in towns, instead of just kind of wiping it out with pesticides and stuff. Around a small bit of water, you know, they create more plants so that more insects and animals can live there, I've been reading about people in France where we live having an argument about, you know, stopping hunters coming into areas and how to go about that and whether it's good. So that rewilding nature, we could also kind of do that with ourselves, with our own belonging, you know? Like rewilding, I know it sounds a bit wild, like rewilding, I was speaking about this on a retreat and somebody thought that I meant something really different. So I don't mean like becoming wild as in a drunk, outrageous person that imposes themselves on other people and has absolutely no social conventions. I mean, as in rewilding and allowing our wildness, as in allowing ourselves to belong as we are. To allow ourselves in the right situations, to show ourselves really to people, to other people, to be able to be real in what we, you know, want to live, what we really want to live. How do we really want to live, you know? In that way, rewilding. And in that way, maybe dropping away some of the conventions and fears of around appearance that we might have, that might be preventing us from doing Tai Chi at the bus stop, something like that, you know? That kind of thing where we just like, how could I ever sit on a train and just meditate, you know? People are going to look at me and think I'm one of those weirdos. I'm talking about that, how coming into a retreat in our everyday life, in the public space, so we're not running around like frenzied people trying to control our lives and get more running from a sense of lack, headless chicken life kind of stuff. Maybe, yeah, how can we be more weirdos? But not in the sense of weirdos, you know, who creep you out, in just being present, you know? It's like, I think the only really great post I've ever seen on Facebook was one saying, it was a cartoon where somebody who was in a cafe was talking, trying to start a conversation with people, and everybody else is on their devices. So people just called the psychiatric hospital. You know? This guy's crazy. He's trying to speak to people, you know. I mean, that kind of rewilding, of going against that kind of robotic hypnosis. And in that belonging, finding ways of belonging in ourself, there can be that finding ways to make friends with ourself. So finding ways to be our own best friend and to really enjoy that company of ourself. So that we love our own company, even when we're bored. Even when we're lonely. So to even get curious about our own loneliness and how that is, to make friends with that loneliness so it's not an enemy. And what I've noticed recently so much is when I've been around somebody who's very lonely, they're often saying, I can't be with people. And yet the real message is, I want to connect with people. You know, that's the real thirst, is to feel more connected. And yet there's difficulty with social stuff, you know. So that's something, it's running through a lot of us, our hearts, that real need to feel like we are connected. And one of the ways that I used to suffer a lot from that feeling, disconnected from others. And I remember once, I don't know where I was, maybe on a walking retreat some years ago, and someone said, all these people started saying, I'm feeling really disconnected. And someone said, I was in a small group or something. Someone said, but maybe that's okay. And that got me going. And since then, I've been like exploring that. Well, what's it like to be present when you feel disconnected from others? And to be so present that you feel when it starts to shift. So the feeling of disconnection, like most emotions stay in the body for 90 seconds, actually. That's just how big and scary an emotion is, 90 seconds. And then there's what we add to it, you know, what we pile on there, beliefs, assumptions, etc. But with that feeling of disconnected from others, to stay present with that and relax around it as part of becoming friends with ourselves, and then feeling how it shifts, and that it's just another feeling, it's just another cloud in the sky of our own hearts, and it moves, and then it becomes less of a thing that I am a disconnected person who can't be with other people, you know, or has difficulty. And then maybe there's that opening towards being able to feel connected with people without needing to be the popular one or the one who talks a lot or anything like that. So that there's that kind of easefulness around others, coming from that inside belonging, and then it doesn't seem like such a big deal. So I'm weaving in the different belongings there, the belonging inside ourselves of becoming our own good spiritual friend, and that belonging with others. And there's also the belonging of our surroundings. And one way with ourself is to have a daily practice of finding a way where we feel that belonging in ourself. Something that you do that you can tap into as a belonging practice and grow it. Grow it through familiarity. Like anything, you know. Like the more we worry about something, the more we become familiar, the more we, you know, the more we know anxiety, the more attention we give to anxiety. And the same with growing some belonging. You know, the more attention we give to it, the more it grows, like watering a plant. So finding that, what it is for you that helps you to grow some of that feeling of belonging here on this planet, in this life. Some people are singing really loudly. walking in the forest or singing away on your own, you know, whatever it is. Some people it's less tangible, you know. Like, for me, it's a certain mixture of colours. If I visualise a certain mixture of colours inside me, there's a very kind of golden light feeling that comes that's very easeful. So finding that activity that helps you, maybe it's drawing, maybe it's something in meditation. And with it, there's often a feeling in the body. And finding where that's located, that feeling in the body, to have that as a sanctuary. A sanctuary for moments of overwhelm, and just to get friendly with that place in us that feels the love, that feels the divine, you know. And it could be in your earlobe, you know. It could be in your bottom lip. It could be in your heart area. It could be in your lower pelvis. It could be in your hip bone, your little toe. You know, it's really up to each person to find where there is some ease, some pleasure that we can dwell in. That is our good friend inside. That we can come back to when we're feeling like our feet are slightly not touching the ground, you know. It's getting cold again. I remember this in South Africa. Sumedha and I, we were by the sea somewhere, and there was like an estuary where the sea came in. And we went for a walk, and when we came back, the tide was up. We couldn't cross over. And so it was funny because there was the sea and then there was this river coming out and then there was the tide coming in there. And we were sitting there kind of, oh dear, how can we cross the river? You know, we don't know if there's currents that will take us out to sharks and crocodiles because this was in Africa. And this guy came, he was a bit of a Indiana Jones type of guy, you know. I think he was Indiana Jones, actually, in South Africa. He came and he was like, hi. We were like, we can't cross the river. How are we going to get back? It's going to get dark. And he was like, you just walk across. He was loads taller than us, you know. We were like, really? He said, yeah, you just walk through. And he offered to hold our camera. So he took our camera like this and walked across. And so we saw that he could do it. And then I walked across and I just remember this feeling when I was up to here in the water that it was lifting me off the ground. It was lifting. The sea was lifting me up and yet I could still just about advance. And that in that moment that, oh my God, I'm going to get pulled out, freak out, anxiety. And no, it's okay. It's okay. I can do this. I can do this. And that's been coming back to me recently quite a lot, that feeling of, I'm being lifted. My body's lifted off the ground. I'm slightly overwhelmed. And yet it's okay. It is okay. And finding that reflex to go, things seem to be going pear-shaped and not okay, and yet it's okay also. Where is that okay feeling? And part of the belonging with other people, often things have been shaped by past experiences, you know? And there's hurts and wounds and so we have perceptions of others being threatening in some way. And we can become closed and frightened of other people because of past experiences that are often valid, you know. And it can be really helpful in the practice of of re-belonging, rewilding, to know what the wounds are doing, you know, what the hurts are driving the car. To know that, you know, sometimes, I mean, with discernment, but sometimes, you know, you can go, well, I don't need to do that anymore, because that was before. So I don't need to be living from reaction to previous hurts, because that's not happening anymore. I can refresh and go, I don't know these humans, and they don't all behave the same way, and they're not necessarily going to behave in the way that has hurt me before. As part of that process of belonging in interconnection with other people. Does that make sense? Another way that we create that unbelonging often is that othering, you know, is really feeling very like others are very separate from us, and the imaginations of the projections we have of them being better and having it all worked out, you know, or they're doing the real practice, they're doing the real life, they've got it all sorted, which is normally not right, hey, because just human existence can get pretty messy, hey. So our speculations of others are often pretty wonky. And especially that, when there is that happening, that I don't belong because, you know, they've got it all, they've got all the signs that it's all working out good. It's not normally right. Or the reverse, you know, where we can quite easily feel like we're on a good one, and then it's like, I'm doing the real thing. I'm doing the real practice, you know. And I felt this quite a bit for the last 8 years. Sumedra and I have been running a retreat place, and I felt that dangerous edge sometimes, you know. Because it's an ecological place and it's very simple and everything, that we could become quite like dogmatic or something, you know, like we're doing the right way and everyone else should stop living their flat lives with central heating and whatever, you know, and do this, what we're doing. And it doesn't work like that, because we all have just different destinies and different karmas and different talents and different riches to give. And some people come to our retreat place and they believe that that's what we're saying, when we're not actually saying that. That we're doing the real thing and that they should give up their lives. And that's not what's happening, actually. So I'm just using that as an example of how quickly, you know, we could often slip into that thinking, you know, and then that's othering others. We're separating ourselves from others instead of just that feeling into how we're all just molecules in the universe, you know. And we're all doing our right thing. And what fascinates me about molecules that I read about a year or two ago, is when there's a wounded part, there's a whole lot of healing molecules that go there, you know, that are in other parts of the body, and they all go like the ambulance, do 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 do, and they go to that special place. But otherwise, all the molecules, they're all getting about, being in there, doing their functions, being in the right place, you know. And so, like humans, we're all in our right lives, we're all in our own lives. And there's a wonder to that. I was amazed a few years ago. My niece, who came out of it very well, got cancer, and they gave her a transplant by putting a healthy young person's blood into her bloodstream to cure the bone marrow cancer. And I was like, but how do the blood that's gone into her, how do they know to go to the bone marrow? And apparently that's part of the magic of molecules. They just do. They know where to go. Those ones know to go to the bone marrow. The other ones go to there, and the other ones go to there. They just know through that magic of the universe. So we are all in our right. We are like those molecules. We're all in our right place, actually. Our life is our life, you know. We are in the right place. Obviously, sometimes there's changes to be made, decisions to be made, transformations, but not someone else's life, more belonging than ours. We all belong in that way, as we are. So belonging with the third one, from belonging with ourselves, being our own good friend, to befriending others, to not separating so much from others, to our surroundings, the environment. And because we have so much information about the climate nowadays, of course it can be pretty freaky, you know, and we can get pretty anxious about that, which can cause more disconnection and not be too helpful to go off on the anxious flight. That one way can be to celebrate, you know, to celebrate nature. As a way, it's not going to cure everything in one go like that, but to actually go out a lot and just be with that nature, be with it, in celebration of its absolute wonder. Like every day we could just go and we could just bow to the sky, the trees, you know, the sun. That, in our heart, there's that pure celebration of nature's, it's not just beauty, because that's just a visual thing, but nature's absolute incredible working. Hey, of all that organisms, from the fungi in the down there and all those insects to the stuff in the sky, the whole lot, you know. This is so incredible. Not to deny, you know, pollution and climate change and everything. It's not a pushing that out of the way, but to in a way find a different way than just when your feet, when you're trying to cross the estuary and your feet are not touching the ground because you can't see the way, that awe and wonder of nature can just help us to come back down to into our belonging here with nature and finding our connected way to live, you know. And there's a lot of trying in like running around, trying to, like, often people at the end of their day's work, they'll run to a yoga, tai chi class, da-di-da-di-da, and end up going home and having to have fast food, you know, because they're doing all this well-being stuff and then the therapist and then this and that, da-da-da, you know. So it's, I'm not saying anything against Tai Chi, yoga, and all of that. But we can also become quite consumerist with all of that. And so we're rushing to try to do something to de-stress, you know. And we could just go home and cook some decent food and make love as well, you know. It's, and just slow down a bit. As part of a celebration of some wholesome food, you know, nature, look what it's giving us, you know. Propositions, huh? Just ideas I'm throwing out there. I'm not having anything in the absolute worked it out way at all. So coming back a little bit to some classical Buddhist offerings, that they tie into this, and they tie into the beginning of this talk about the gap between what we want the world to be and what we want our meditation to be. A great way of working with that is, as I was guiding a bit on the last meditation session, is when we were sitting on the boat, bobbing in awareness, is to just be bobbing, to just be with just the different pulls and pushes of going towards what I want and what I don't want, you know? So knowing our resistances. And sometimes it can feel like watching a game of ping pong or something, you know, between pleasure and pain, between want and don't want. It can be really stabilizing to do that practice of just watching the movements of the heart, mind, body, of wanting to grasp something, to get something, or wanting, not wanting something, and that energy of that pushing away, even as we just sit there in stillness. So many wants and not wants can be flowing through the system. And that can be really, really fascinating to just see that and how they change just in 45 minutes of sitting in meditation. And the more neutral grey zones can be something to be interested in as well, because they're less intense, so they're not taking up our attention so easily. But they can be really worth knowing as well, to have some awareness of that. But maybe I'll guide a meditation on that tomorrow. And knowing our insulations, I think, is really helpful. Maybe asking ourselves, well, what am I insulating myself from? And that comes back to that, you know, that pleasure, pain, you know, discomfort, comfort, that kind of duality that we can get quite stuck in. Knowing, what am I insulating from? What do I not want to know about what's happening here? And I find that actually when I really really taper it down to just that practice, just sitting there watching it, there's an incredible stability and groundedness in it. When we're just being aware of what we want to get rid of and what we want to get, there's a kind of centeredness that comes from doing that practice that is steadying in crazy times. So it's a moment by moment practice rather than an existential life thing of I really need to work out what I want and what I don't want. It's not that, you know. It's sitting there on our little boat just observing the energies of want, don't want, etc. And that bringing curiosity to that, raising up the energy to bring some curiosity. What am I running after? What am I running away from? And these, the actual movements in classical Buddhism, you call it the mind's movements, you know. But we could say a heart body, hey, movement of wanting, not wanting, are not something, it's not something to judge that it's there, you know. It's just part of being human. It's what we do. It's what animals do. It's what, you know, it's part of just being a human being that there's that movement. But knowing it can be interesting, can be beneficial, really beneficial. And I feel that it brings us into belonging, that. To at least know the movements. And then from there, we can decide whether we do want to go towards that we're saying, I want that. We can feel into the wholesomeness. Oh, is that something that's true for me to go towards? Or that I don't want that. And sometimes that is really what is right, you know? That no, I do not want that, you know? It really is true. And sometimes it's just more trying to control our life and not accept just the beingness. So it's not without, it's not passive, it's not without action eventually. But it's where the action is coming from. It's coming from that knowing, those movements, those currents, a bit, in ourselves. I think I've probably said well enough. Does anybody want to add something or ask something or share something? We've got about 5 minutes.
A bit like not completely related, but when you do the retreats in France, do you also speak in French or do you still speak in English?
Most of them we speak in English.
Okay. And did you find that people there, do they, because obviously it's like quite like a different mentality as well to with the English and the French? Is there any...
But we mainly get people from all over the world come.
Oh, okay, so everybody comes in.
Yeah, sometimes we get some French people come who speak pretty good English.
Mm.
Yeah. Nice. But it's been not so easy to find... To have enough French people who want to come. So this year we have a teacher coming who's a French teacher. So we'll have French people coming, one of the retreats. And then we have some other retreats that are not in French. Thank you. I think it's the guest. No?
The guest house is a different.
Not the guest house, the guest. Yeah. Shall I read it again? I was just thinking that.
Mm.
So for me, this poem is really about that belonging place in here and finding that safe sanctuary. Place of beauty, refuge inside us that I feel that the more that we've become familiar with that, the more we know that it's in others as well, and so there's that others are less threatening, and so is the world in a sense. The guest is inside you. And also inside me. You know the sprout is hidden inside the seed. We are all of us struggling. None of us has gone far. Let your arrogance go and look around inside. Are there any last questions that might be bubbling up? That's good. We'll let it simmer and digest for a bit, and if you feel like there's something coming later, you can leave a note, or you can ask tomorrow and we can talk about that. Thank you for your presence and listening.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.